Good morning, everybody. The House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. It's about 8 minutes after 8 on February 11th, 2010. With us this morning, a friend and colleague, Representative Peterson on my right, Representative Johnson, Representative and Vice Chair Paul Seaton, and I know that Representative Gatto is engaged upstairs with the Finance Subcommittee on Military and Veterans Affairs, and he'll be here shortly. This morning, we are going to be covering an overview on the potential impact, or I guess I should say the impact of the U.S. Supreme Court decision of Citizens United case regarding campaign contributions. In a nutshell, the United States Supreme Court has come down with a very, very significant opinion regarding on issues of free speech, particularly as it pertains to contributions by corporations in support or in opposition to candidates and/or various propositions. And obviously, this has a significant political effect throughout the nation, and certainly here in Alaska. Everybody and uncle is running for something. The issues, as always, are hot and heavy, and this affects everybody who's running for office, from municipal level to here in the state house to lieutenant governor and the governor. But it has even a larger potential impact, I think, on what I would call Mr. and Mrs. Alaska, because you know, candidates at all different levels send out information on their candidacy, what they stand for, what they oppose, and so on, and that's good. And other people do too, but here we have a situation potentially of corporations doing the same thing. And I want to get into that in more depth. I want to discuss how foreigners on these multinational corporations could impact the political process and what kind of voice they have. And a lot of other comments here, but rather than go too deeply at this point, I would like to get some comment from some folks in our Department of Law. And I'd like to say at the outset, the purpose of this hearing is not to debate the pros and cons of this decision by the Supreme Court. That's an interesting topic of political discussion, philosophical discussion, you know, at some other level. That's not the purpose of this. The Supreme Court has made a decision on this, as they have on many other issues, and so it has an impact on it, good, bad, or whatever, it doesn't matter. We have to deal with what we have now. And so I'm concerned, what do we do here in the government in Alaska, from the administration and legislative branch to make this work? I'm working under the presumption that everybody wants to do the right thing. Candidates do. I think corporations do. And contributors of all kinds, you know, really want to do that. So I'm not interested in debating the pros and cons of this decision. I am interested in what needs to be done by the administration and or the legislature, and who's going to do what and when is it going to be, because elections are right around the corner. The primary elections, of course, at least for us, are coming up in August, followed soon thereafter by the general elections in November. So it has great significance on everybody involved, and I think the top of that list has to be the citizens of the state of Alaska. This could affect policy for a long ways out. So with that, I'd like to thank the folks who've come in this morning, and Mr. I'm not sure if I pronounced your name correctly, Patterson?
Yes.
Okay. Would you please come forward and introduce yourself, sir, and give us your take on this? I know in my own office, when I read about this decision, the first thing I did was call APOC, Alaska Public Officers Commission, and say, what now, folks, what do we do? And at that time, he said, I don't know, we're depending on Department of Law. Then I called Department of Law, and they didn't have an answer that time, and they told me they were going to get back with me. So here we are this morning. Could you give us a brief overview of this thing and then talk about, you know, the particulars of what we need to do, what somebody needs to do?
Certainly, to an extent I can do that. First of all, my name is John Patas, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Labor and State Affairs Section out of Anchorage. I represent APOC in general matters, and I also advise the staff in adjudication matters, and I also help with the advisory opinion process. I've been asked to present on behalf of Department of Law and to discuss Citizens United in a general sense and to also discuss its potential impact on Alaska laws. But first, just by way of clarification, there's a number of things that Citizens United did not impact. Corporations and labor unions still may not contribute directly to candidates. That's an important distinction to make. Disclosure and disclaimer laws were not impacted directly by the decision. However, disclosure and disclaimer laws in Alaska are in a state of flux after the decision. Individual contribution limits remain unaffected. Individuals still can only contribute $500 every calendar year to a candidate, $5,000 to a political party. Ballot measure law, unaffected by this decision. And political party limits, contributions to candidate limits, still unaffected. I'd like to give you a general review of Citizens United, and if you have questions anywhere along the way, feel free to stop and ask.
Thank you.
It's first important to understand what this case was. It was a case about candidate election free speech. And it didn't interpret an Alaska law directly, but it certainly implicates our laws. U.S. Supreme Court constitutional decisions are the supreme law of the land, and states don't have greater latitude than Congress to abridge the freedom of speech. Citizens United not only invalidated a federal independent expenditure law, it also validated disclosure and disclaimer laws. It's an important distinction, as you all know, in campaign finance. An expenditure law is separate and distinct from disclosure laws and disclaimers. So if an expenditure is made, there's still laws that are constitutional, which allow us to know who's speaking, what they're spending on the speech, and when they make the communication, that they have to tell you who they are. So those laws are implicated, but the only issue in Citizens United was the independent expenditure of corporations and labor unions. It's important to note what the law was that was invalidated. It was a federal law which banned express corporate and labor union advocacy for or against a candidate using funds from the corporation's general treasury 30 days before a candidate election, 60 days before a general election. So that's 30 days before a primary, 60 days before a general election. Corporations couldn't speak from their own corporate treasuries. That's the law that the U.S. Supreme Court found unconstitutional as violating First Amendment speech rights. One of the issues is, well, why do corporations like Citizens United have First Amendment free speech rights? Again, you know, the court noted that corporations do have certain legal rights, perpetual life, limited liability, but at the same time, the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. The amendment doesn't limit its application to just speakers. The amendment also analyzes whether specific expressions are protected by the First Amendment. So the First Amendment applies not just to speakers, but also to speech and political speech. The speech that was banned by 441B restricted corporations' political speech, and the government can't restrict political speech based on a corporate identity alone. There has to be a compelling government interest in order to restrict First Amendment speech, particularly political speech. The federal government tried three separate arguments to say that there was a compelling government interest. All three of them failed in front of the court. The first was the anti-distortion interest that this wealth that corporations and labor unions can amass dilutes the message of smaller corporations or smaller individuals, even candidates. This was the rationale that worked in Austin v. Michigan Chamber of Commerce. It was the rationale adopted by State of Alaska courts in AKCLU versus State. So this distortion was the compelling government interest since 1990 that allowed laws banning expenditures by independent expenditures by corporations and labor unions. That was the compelling government interest for the last 18 years. But after Citizens United, this is not a compelling government interest. Then the court didn't find that anti-corruption was a compelling government interest. And this is the rationale that all this money that independent expenditures by corporations and labor unions create an actual corruption or the appearance of corruption. The law prior to Citizens United distinguishes contributions from independent expenditures. So the government, or the courts rather, have allowed this rationale to apply to contributions. But when an expenditure is independent, it can't result in quid pro quo corruption. And when you look at it, when you try to balance that against the potential or appearance of corruption, you have to balance that against free speech. And the court wasn't willing to say that the appearance of corruption by all this independent expenditure is a good enough reason to essentially ban speech, political speech. The government tried a third argument. It was shareholder protection, that shareholders are powerless to stop the message of corporations. This was also not a compelling government interest, in part because, you know, they considered the internal mechanisms of a corporation could ensure that the smaller shareholder could seek redress for any improper messaging. So without a compelling government interest, the law on its face, and again, that's a federal law, was unconstitutional. With respect to our laws, at the outset, corporations and labor unions are certainly contemplated by our laws. We have laws that restrict corporations and labor unions from making expenditures in candidate elections. And it's important to note here that the only impact on Alaska law is corporation and labor unions can't make political speech in campaign elections. And that's independent political speech in campaign elections. That's the only law implicated. And under our laws, that's 1513.067, 1513.135.
Would you clarify that for me, please?
Corporations and labor unions are not entitled to make expenditures in our candidate elections. They're not amongst the class of people who we allow under our laws to make those type of expenditures. What we're finding, though, is that expenditures, it's a very broad category, as you know. It involves certain speech, though, at times, especially through the definitions of express communications and electioneering communications. Those are subsets of the definition of expenditure. Those are political speech. And I think under the law, expenditures like that, they are subject to scrutiny after Citizens United. Our laws, through the definition of expenditure, restrict corporations and labor unions from making independent communication on political speech. So our laws are certainly implicated by the case. Disclosure and disclaimer were not implicated. So where a disclosure or a disclaimer law is applicable to a corporation or a labor union, that law is still intact. I can go through a list of disclosure laws that apply to corporations and labor unions at this time. Corporations and labor unions can't make expenditures anonymously. That's a valid disclaimer law. That's still a law.
So you mean that if corporation XYZ expends money, they have to say paid for or contributed by corporation XYZ?
Well, there's...
But not the people in the boards of directors who, or whoever it is that makes that decision.
That's certainly one way to not make an honest speech. But the general law is there that they can't do this anonymously under 1513. But because we're in this new terrain where before we just restricted all expenditures, we didn't allow a corporation or a labor union to make any expenditure in a candidate election. There are certain areas of the law that don't apply as well to corporations and labor unions. One area is the treasurer law. It doesn't apply to corporations in that when a corporation or a labor union wants to make an independent expenditure in a political speech, were that to be deemed constitution or were that to be applied to corporations, they don't have to do that through their treasurer. And there are certain other laws where the corporation or where certain entities like groups have to make that speech through their treasurer.
I'd like to recognize that President Gatto was joined some time ago and now been joined by Representative Grunberg. Representative Seaton.
And is that, thank you, Mr. Chairman, is that non-requirement for the expenditure to be reported through the treasurer because we didn't allow those expenditures before? Or is that a specific exemption we made for them in the law?
It's the first. Because we just outright restricted any expenditure in a candidate election, there was no reason to apply the treasurer requirement on corporations and labor unions for independent speech.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman.
Continue.
And so do you have a write-up for us detailing those things like, you know, we might want to consider this because it was left out of the laws because we didn't allow that that previous
certainly
speech.
Through the chair, we're still working through an internal analysis of all the different issues. The analysis should be through very soon, detailing what we believe are all the impacts of.
So this is going to go to like AIPOC and to the various candidacy and initiative supporters and opponents?
In short order, it will be disseminated to the public and through to the legislature and AIPOC. As AIPOC's attorney, I mean, I certainly need to be able to give guidance in this area. So, yeah, it's forthcoming.
Please continue. Oh, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In prohibited expenditures under our statute, it says that you cannot be anonymous, can't make an anonymous, can't even talk this morning, anonymous expenditure unless, and it lists several things, and it goes down to printed material other than an advertisement in a newspaper. So that's an exemption to the anonymous contribution.
I believe that,
or expenditure.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I think that only applies to individuals. I don't have the...
Reverend John, could you... where are you in the book there? What are you reading off of?
Page 28 of the presentation, it's statute 1513.084. So an individual may not do it. It says a person, but in the state of Alaska, a person is defined as anything other than a government entity, right?
Well, under... Through the chair, the definition of person includes labor union and corporation, and it's a separate and distinct definition from groups, from individuals, non-group entity. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, if I may. But we're talking about corporate. We're talking about labor unions and corporations here. So, this, when you say a person, that would a labor union or a business that's covered under the Supreme Court ruling would be classified a person.
Correct.
So if I understand when I read this correctly, that a business could do anything other than anything in printing other than a newspaper or periodical anonymously. 1513084, prohibited expenditures.
Right. A person, that's a corporation or a labor union.
Right.
Is not entitled to make an expenditure anonymously. That's a valid disclaimer law.
But then, read the next, unless the expenditure is. And then read C2, or C II.
Yeah, that language is qualified by large A, paid for by an individual, individual being a human being.
So a corporation or a labor union, or for that matter, a PAC, or anyone else, could not make an anonymous flyer without a disclaimer under this statute?
That's correct.
Any more?
Works for me.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so to go one step further, then, but an individual who could print up a political flyer without their name on it and go door-to-door in their neighborhood to try to convince their neighbors to vote for something, a person or a ballot initiative, and they, so they have no disclaimer responsibility, is that correct?
Under this very distinct set of circumstances, yes.
Okay, please continue.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Could, there's a little confusion on.
A lot of confusion.
Corporation, individual, natural person, person, all of those references occur somewhere in it. Could you just briefly go down and clarify for me, natural person, individual, person?
Corporate person.
And I guess the other thing would be non-group entity?
Certainly.
Or if you have that citation here, I can look it up, but I haven't found it in one place.
Yeah, it's all in the definitions, and then the definitions refer to other statutes. But the simple way to think of this is that our laws define entities as either a candidate or an individual, which is a natural person. A person, which is a catch-all for corporations, labor unions, business entities. And then the non-group entity is a business that is run for the principal purpose of political speech, or, and a, I'm making sure I hit all of these. And then a group is two individuals joining together for the principal purpose of influencing an election, and they take a substantial step towards acting in that regard. And I recognize it's a complex set of laws, and it's the best I can do to parse out. And the important distinction to make is that when a law refers to a person in this extent, under 1513, it's referring to labor unions and corporations. So the internal analysis has been trying to establish, well, what does Citizens United do to persons in 15 and 13?
And one follow-up.
Go ahead.
And so, under the statutes that we're talking about now, person not only includes a labor union and a corporation, but excludes individuals and natural persons?
Right. That is.
Representative Johnson?
Well, I just don't, I want clarity on that. I don't believe that that does. I think a natural person is a person, and I, you know, I'd like to.
An individual.
Like one of us.
Yeah. It's the same as a corporation, basically.
Through the chair.
Well, that's a legal person.
Right.
Through the chair, the laws distinguish between individual, which is a natural person. And person is defined as including labor unions, non-group entities, groups, corporations, labor unions. They have separate and distinct meanings throughout the statute.
And in this, that.
Go ahead.
And in this statute, then, the way you're reading that as including, it isn't in reference to natural persons and persons being natural persons and including these others. You're saying that that person, as we are supposed to read it in the APOC statutes, excludes individuals and natural persons.
Yes, I'm almost certain, but if Mr. Dosik is on the phone, he's also an APOC attorney. I want to make sure that we've got this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Could you give us this? Hello, this is Thomas Dosik.
Who's this, please?
Hi, this is Thomas Dosik, also from the Attorney General's office.
Yes, go ahead, identify yourself and continue.
I believe the question was what constitutes a person and an individual under the APOC statutes. And a person is a broader group than an individual. It does include individuals, but it also includes corporations, labor unions, trusts, and pretty much any other recognizable entity or organization.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
Apologies. I think with respect to the remainder, so when we talk about persons, when we talk about 1513, when the law applies to a person, it's applying to corporations and labor unions, and that's where the analysis is kind of drawn from. When a disclaimer and a disclosure law refers to persons, it's referring to corporations and labor unions. So we've touched on that 084 establishes that corporations and labor unions cannot make their political speech anonymously. And under 040D and E, the corporation and labor union does have certain disclosure requirements as well.
And those requirements come from where? From Alaska statute?
From Alaska statute, correct. And those were not invalidated by Citizens United.
So. And so what is the extent of the disclosure? You say a corporation that covering XYZ, or do you name the board of directors? Or and who makes the decision within these corporations? I assume it's different for each corporation, you know, how they handle that.
Yeah, when it comes to disclosing, within 10 days of making the independent expenditure, were that to be allowed, the independent expenditure has to be reported to APOC within 10 days.
That's coming from that particular corporation?
Yes. If the corporation makes independent political speech, it's our current view that 040D and E require that corporation to report that expenditure within 10 days of making it.
And at some point, I want to get into corporations, and especially, you know, a multinational corporation where you have foreign persons who are on those boards of directors or in the decision-making capacity in a corporation to influence the decision whether or not to make these independent expenditures.
Certainly.
You pick the time for that.
Oh, I can certainly do it now.
Representative Johnson and then Gatto.
I want to be real clear. When you say political speech, I mean, there are political speech that happens outside of an election. If, for example, someone were to have an opposition to a particular piece of legislation or a particular legislator, and they did something outside of the election cycle, is that political speech?
Political speech, at least through the expenditure definition, includes express communications and electioneering communications. What it has to do is that it has to be a yay or nay on a vote. And if there's no election, it can't really fall under the expenditure law.
What if there's a piece of legislation before the legislature that they express a yay or nay vote to? Vote no against House Bill 1.
We vote all the time here. We vote in committees. We vote on the House floor, et cetera. And plus, we vote for candidates.
Certainly. And under express communication, that involves a yes or no vote on a specific candidate. Again, the ruling only invalidated independent expenditures on a candidate election.
Representative Johnson, follow up.
I don't think so at this point.
Okay. Representative Gatto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Boeing Company in Everett, Washington is almost exclusively union. The Boeing Company in South Carolina is exclusively non-union. So do the union members, can the union actually be the corporation? I mean, it's a major group. Can the unions in Everett, Washington say Boeing supports Representative Johnson? And Boeing turns around and says Boeing opposes Representative Johnson. And that's where ordinary people get driven up the wall trying to figure out what's legal and what's not legal. So as a union, can they say we're the corporation, since most of the workers are in our Boeing union?
The decision applies equally to labor unions and corporations. The independent expenditure for the speech you're providing, if it comes from Boeing, at least in a federal election now, Boeing can make that speech through its own treasury. The labor union can make that speech through its own treasury. And the disclaimer and the disclaimer and disclosure laws follow. So you would, on the federal side at least, you would know this is Boeing, we're making this speech from our corporate treasury, this is our opinion. The labor union has the same right after Citizens United.
Follow up.
Sure.
Well, we see ads on TV. We are the workers of Boeing, blank de blank. Okay? We are the workers, not the corporate entity. So they are making not political speech, but they're advertising that Boeing's a great company. Can they turn around and say, we support Representative Johnson also, and say, we, the people of Boeing, support Representative Johnson in his bid to be U.S. Senator?
The distinction there is whether it's actually the labor union making the speech or whether it's a group of employees who have come together to say, we want to do this. If it's a group of employees getting together to say up or down for a candidate, they're a group. If it's the labor union from its own organization saying, we want to make this speech, it's from the labor union, from their own treasury.
And the difference between a group of employees that are in a union and the labor union is?
It is a fine distinction, but the group of employees have to disclose as a group, and they have to report as a group, and they have to essentially, when you go and you look at an AIPAC report, if hypothetically, you would know that by looking at the report, this is not the labor union, this is not Boeing, this is a separate group, and you could.
So, Reverend John,
thank you. And I think therein lies the difficulty with this, in that I don't know a lot of people that spend a lot of time at AIPAC going through reports as to what Group A is, what Group B is.
Candidates do, but we're
kind of dependent as a society on the disclaimer that appears at the bottom of the ad that says paid for by citizens, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that has to be in a certain size type depending on where you run it. And I think, you know, the declaration of who you are in AIPAC is one thing, but also that disclaimer can be very misleading too, and that's part of this as well. Now they can do it. All they have to say is paid for by Boeing at the bottom of the ad or wherever it is. Is that?
Yeah, under 084, the expenditure can't be anonymous. Now what that means, if after Citizens United there's independent corporate expenditures, what does it mean to not be anonymous? It's something that merits scrutiny. What we want them to disclose and what we want in the disclaimers is, you know, a new terrain for us after Citizens United.
So, Mr. Chairman, we have ballot initiatives that says, and you can name yourself anything, you know, Citizens for a Clean Life could be, you know, whatever it is, and you can have your name is not necessarily representative of your position on an issue. So how are we going to have to get into a point, and they don't have to report their who their board is or who where their money came from or anything else. They just have to report, I think, their treasurer and board member. Will this require at this point us to start getting who the contributors to those groups and entities are now? Or are we still operating under the same kind of, because you can't make anonymous. Is it anonymous if you donate it? If the board of directors do it, you have to do the board of directors, or if it's a group of 40 people that kick money in to do it, do they have to, we have to list all of them now? Does that change our laws under this?
It doesn't change the laws with respect to groups. Groups already report on 30-day, 7-day, and they make reports telling you essentially expenditures made, money coming in.
Right.
So if you go to APOC, you can see that, you know, these are the people who have contributed to my group. These are the expenditures I've made. Now, with independent expenditures, it's different because we treat, if corporations and labor unions were entitled to make corporate speech in Alaska, they would report essentially like an individual. They would tell us 10 days within reporting that they made the expenditure.
Reverend Grunberg and then Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like you to focus on AS 15.13.084, subsection 2, which says a person may not make an expenditure, sub 2, using a fictitious name.
Oh, I see.
Or the name of another. I can't find any definition of fictitious name in here, and I've looked through the general index and I don't find any other relevant definition or anywhere it's defined at all. Do the regs define what's mean by a fictitious name, or is there precedent in the agency itself, any decision that defines that? And secondly, if there's not, what is the genesis or the legislative history? What was intended by that term, do you know?
I don't. There's regulation on give me a minute to just look at the regs.
Of course. Sure. And you know, this, my questions, Mr. Chair, can be for anyone else, Mr. Dosick or anybody from the agency itself. I'm wondering if there's been any decisions in that have litigated, you know, an agency common law decision that's litigated what's meant by a fictitious name.
Chairman Lynn, this is Holly Hill from the Alaska Public Offices Commission.
Yes, Holly. Please continue.
Through the chair, Mr. Grunberg, there is a current case before the commission which we're not at liberty to discuss.
May I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Is one of the issues what is a fictitious name?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, fictitious name issue is a part of the case.
Could you give me the name of the case so I can watch for it?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, yes, sir. It's a fairly long case name, but the case title is 0901CB, and it is also assigned a hearing officer, and that is APO-0231.
Okay, and when do you expect to have a decision on that?
Through the chair, Mr. Chair, our Assistant Attorney General, Thomas Dosick, may be able to answer that better than I can.
Thank you.
Mr. Dosick's on the line, sir.
Yes, I know that.
Yes, yes. We have a, we should probably have a decision within several months on that case.
So around election time?
Possibly, yeah.
May I continue?
President Grunberg.
Thank you. The reason I'm asking these questions is because I think when we were talking, Representative Gatto and maybe Representative Johnson, about somebody giving contributions that may be under somebody else's name or something that's not quite, I mean, the amount of the contribution would be divulged, but the name would be misleading. That's why I'm focusing on that subsection too, because that seems to deal with that issue and put some sidebars and stuff on there. And I'm going to ask the same question concerning, quote, using the name of another. Are there any decisions or any regulations further defining the term, quote, using the name of another?
And could you also relate his question to how this might relate to the subject under discussion here?
Yeah, that's through the chair, Representative Grunberg. Through Citizens United, we're only dealing with independent corporation speech. We're only dealing with independent labor union speech. 084 prohibits those entities from speaking anonymously in that context. There's a right. separate law that deals with contributions. Citizens United had no impact on a corporation's inability to make contributions in Alaska. And there's a separate contribution law that says individuals or individuals who are entitled to make contributions can't make that contribution in the name of another. So that's not right.
directly. No, I'm not talking about that.
Right.
This deals with expenditures, not contributions. That's what you're driving at, is it not?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, a contribution is...
Through the chair, please.
Through the chair. A contribution is money to support somebody's campaign. An expenditure is for a political purpose, but not to support somebody's campaign, right?
It's through the chair, that's accurate, yeah.
But would that include an expenditure to put on TV ads in opposition or support of somebody's campaign?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, that's, I want to make sure I understand so I can answer best, but the question is whether there's any law regarding you can't make independent expenditures in the name of another. Is that what you're trying to understand? I'm just at a loss. The problem is that 084 applies to expenditures. And we have separate laws that tell us that contributions can't be made in the name of another.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think some of our confusion is our law in 084 is kind of made moot because we said you couldn't do this, and now we have a Supreme Court decision that says we can. And our question is, are we going to have sideboards? Because we didn't allow the entire purpose before, and now what kinds of disclosures, what kinds of reports, what kinds of things are we going to prevent and all in this new arena that was previously prohibited in Alaska? So, and I think that one of the things we need to keep straight is expenditures could be an expenditure, but if it's coordinated with a campaign, then it's a campaign contribution, and it no longer falls under the independent expenditure definition. So, as I understand it, the only thing we're talking about here is independent expenditures, and as soon as that would be coordinated with a campaign, then it's no longer independent, and so it would be illegal. But someone could take a ad out as an independent expenditure that would almost look identical as something that was coordinated, because you would be supporting a candidate totally independent of working with that candidate, but supporting them. And so it's going to be an area in which we're going to have problems, because the two pieces of speech could look identical, but one would be permitted by the new, by Citizens United, and one is prevented by Alaska law that was not overturned by Citizens United, and that is campaign contribution.
So you're saying that I could put a vote for me advertisement in the newspaper, put a design, and then some corporation goes to independent expenditure, and it's used exactly the same thing.
Mr. Chairman, a corporation or a labor union under Citizens United could have an ad that said, vote for Bob Lynn. It could look close, but they wouldn't be able to get your graphics from you, because then there would be a coordination between your campaign.
You go down to Kinko's and put it on a scanner, and you got it.
Well,
without coordinating with me.
And that is, that's why these laws, Mr. Chairman, are going to be so interesting for us to craft.
That's why we're having this hearing. Representative Grunberg and then Johnson.
I think that part of the confusion is the definition of contribution and expenditure. And if you would look at the definitional section in the back of our stuff, it's AS 15.13.400.
What page is that?
It's at pages 49 and 50. Contribution is defined on page 49, and expenditure is defined on page 50. Mr. Tosin, it seems that the definitions to me, as a lawyer, but only a family lawyer, a little confusing. 4A defines contribution means purchase, etc., that is made for the purpose of influencing the nomination or election of a candidate, and in one section of law, for the purpose of influencing ballot proposition or question. On the other hand, expenditure means a purchase, etc., for the purpose of influencing a nomination or election of a candidate or somebody who later becomes a candidate, or IV, influencing the outcome of a ballot proposition or question. These seem to me to be nearly identical. Through the chair, Mr. Potosin, what's the difference?
Coordinated expenditures can also be contributions.
So it's a subset?
No, I wouldn't say they're subsets. And I think that when you deal in this area of law, that you have to be careful what you're doing in certain circumstances. I believe that there are times when an expenditure can also be a contribution. And corporations and labor unions making independent expenditure have to be wary of where the line has been drawn, particularly after Citizens United, where the only implication to our law is an independent expenditure that has no connection to contribution, has no connection to a coordinated expenditure. It's a difficult area of law to determine where that line is, and the only thing implicated is an independent expenditure made from a corporate treasury where there is no coordination with the candidate. So by its nature, it can't be anywhere near a coordinated expenditure. It can't be anywhere near a contribution.
May I follow up?
And as we progress through this hearing, we all keep in mind we want to be going toward recommended legislation to resolve some of these issues, so everybody concerned knows what to do. What legislation might you recommend, either to your own administration or to the legislature, for somebody here to do? That's where we're going with this, so we can clear this stuff up, and we have some statute for everybody to rely on. Representative Grunberg, continue, and then Representative Johnson.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with my next question. This seems to be an area of the law that has sort of grown up. One part of it was drafted, and then another part was drafted, and then there were agency decisions and regulations and stuff. And it's kind of unclear because of the way the law has developed. What I'm going to be a little more specific following what the chair was saying. That was
Please.
Where I was going. And I don't need an answer on this immediately, and this is really for the agency, maybe Ms. Hill or any of you guys over there. Should the legislature be looking at maybe making this area of the law a little clearer, make it a little simpler, easier to understand because it is so confusing? Should that maybe be one of our goals here?
And I don't know what direction you've received from the administration, but is the administration talking about legislation to come before us? Because, you know, we're in this 90-day session thing here. We're going to have some. We're going to have it go through both houses. Are you folks coming up with something now? Are you drafting something now? Or do you expect somebody in the legislature to do that? Because I think it needs to be clarified.
As an attorney with Department of Law, it's my job to alert policymakers of the changing landscape of what's going on after Citizens United.
And that means what?
Well, that means that I essentially have been writing, and we've been researching, and we've been working on internal analysis. Now, when that analysis gets presented, the question of whether there need to be legislative changes, those can be made by the policymakers. But it's my job to essentially determine what those areas are, and we're certainly doing that. We're certainly very close to coming out with that definitive impact statement that I referred
to. And for somebody to do legislation to straighten out this mess, because I think it's a mess at this point.
Mr.
Reverend Johnson, and then Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 28 of the handout we have, it's 15, back to 084, and basically using a fictitious name or name of another. What can you define corporation? If I say it's Craig Corp or Gatto Corp, and that's the name, but the individuals within that, you know, you can't use the name of another, so actually the corporation, do we have an accurate enough definition of what name of another is? I mean, if it's a corporation, according to this, they can't use the name of another. Well, if I'm a board of directors of that, are they using my name when they say whatever the corporation is, or is it the shareholders? How far does that go in not being able to use the name, and do we need to define that more clearly in statute? Because it's, you know, it's kind of vague to me when you say a corporation, that's the name of another, because they represent other people they're agents for.
From an maybe I can answer it this way. From an enforcement perspective, if there were a case where corporate treasury funds were being used to fund a commercial,
right,
and they told us that it was from just the CEO, and they said, this is my independent, I'm an individual, and this is, that would be a fictitious name. That would be using the name of another, because what you've done is you've used corporate treasury funds. And essentially, from an enforcement standpoint, you would have a case to be brought against that corporation and potentially that individual as well. But it is an area. Yeah, it's these are the questions that come up. I mean, can we define these areas better? And it certainly merits more scrutiny.
And by the same token, if the CEO can't do it, can the Treasury pay for the name without identifying the CEO? So, you know, those are the questions that I don't know that we have answers to. But do we need to redefine what a name is? Maybe. I mean, is there a definition of in the statute, because it says you can't use a fictitious name or the name of another?
And what we're discussing here is a disclaimer. That's
right.
What we want.
Right.
And that's what you're essentially contemplating, is a broader or a better disclaimer. And under Citizens United, those kind of broader, these are kind of the discussions that various states are having now. How far do we want to go in our disclaimer language?
Right.
And so this is a valid point to be contemplating at this point. Whether, you know, to what extent you want that corporation to tell you who they are. So,
and that's, Mr. Chair, that's my point about a name of another, fictitious name. Do we have a definition that would even work in this, in the situations that we've just discussed?
Can we, go ahead, is that you, Holly?
Yes, sir. Chairman Lynn, through the chair, I believe it was Representative Johnson, we have a regulation regarding contributions using the name of another, and that is 2AAC 50.258, and some of the language in there may be appropriate either for statutory or regulatory purposes.
Mr. Chair.
And I wanted to ask, before I forget here, you have an international corporation, meaning a corporation, you know, multinational, the board of directors made up of U.S. citizens from other countries, other nationalities. Can we make Alaska law governing that tells a board of directors, multinational board of directors, what to do?
Well, in respect to an expenditure law or a disclaimer or a disclosure law?
Well, both, perhaps.
Okay. With respect to expenditure, Citizens United didn't directly take up that issue. There's a federal law, 441E, which prohibits foreign nationals from spending funds in connection with not only federal elections, but state elections as well.
So a foreign national cannot make a political contribution to any of us. You know, I know that, not even $5, but they can be a voice in an independent expenditure for or against somebody. That doesn't...
Again, under Citizens United, the Federal Election Campaign Act law that prohibits purely foreign national corporations from speaking in state elections is still valid.
No, I didn't mean purely. I meant those who have a board of directors, but with... on the board directors who are, some are foreign nationals, some are U.S. citizens.
The distinction is a foreign national, one of those board members, cannot coordinate to make independent speech.
But they can vote if that's what they do to make this expenditure.
There's a distinction here in federal law. The federal law allows a U.S. subsidiary to speak from its own treasury funds. There can't be any coordination from a foreign national.
So, Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, Representative Grunberg, then Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tassin, the only definition I've found on corporation is in the corporate code, where it says in AS 105990 sub 3, that corporation means a corporation organized under the laws of this or another state or of this or another country. I think that may go to what Representative Johnson was talking about. I think that we are hamstrung a bit in that we have the relevant statutes, but the committee members, I don't think, have been given a copy of the regulations. And for us really to talk about some of this stuff, we're going to need to get copies of those, too. So that, because they're just important in your work, maybe even more important than these general statutes. I think that, you know, the concept of Citizens United deals with whether they can be prohibited from making an expenditure to an independent expenditure to discuss a candidate or to discuss an issue independent of a campaign, but they don't deal with the next question, is what kind of regulations are going to be permissible within that general parameter, like disclosure. And that's why, Mr. Chairman, we're asking that second generation of questions, which is the area that we may or may not be able to legislate in. And that's why we're going into these foreign corporate, all these other areas, so we can see what we can do. And I understand that you're still doing your research on that. But one thing that I think would be helpful to the committee, or certainly myself, would be to know generally the limits of that U.S. Supreme Court decision and the unresolved issues that may allow us to further legislate. That wasn't a question, so I'll have a question. Any comment?
No.
That's the question.
But I understand what you're...
Am I right in where we are here?
No, you've characterized the landscape of where we are accurately.
So. We need a GPS, I think. Representative Seaton.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think we have heard that Citizens United allowed disclosure laws, didn't impact those, didn't impact reporting requirements. It was the ability to make the speech. So I think that it's, from what I've heard, we're fairly well able to make those reporting and disclosure requirements. I guess cutting to the chase on the foreign corporations, I mean, as I understand it, BP, British Petroleum, itself would not be able to make an independent expenditure. However, BP Alaska, a subsidiary formed within the United States, could, whether it's the Sumimoto of Japan and Sumimoto Alaska or any subsidiary that is formed under the corporate laws of Alaska or within the United States, I guess, as we currently have our laws, we don't distinguish between Alaska corporations and corporations in other states, they would be permitted to make independent expenditures. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yeah, U.S. subsidiaries allowed to speak from profits made in the United States. The foreign parent can't coordinate that message with the subsidiary.
And just one follow-up. So the only restriction, is that the only restriction that they have to be profits made in the United States, not profits from their foreign operations?
Yeah, the important distinction is that there can't be any coordination or any assistance from that
parent corporation.
From that parent corporation, yeah, that's the distinction.
Very interesting.
And again, that's federal law. That's not Alaska state law.
And if I could just follow up on that specific point, then under your reading of what we would be able to do, would we be able to be more restrictive than that federal law, or is the federal law basically determinative that any subsidiary corporation that's formed in the United States, as long as it doesn't coordinate from the foreign parent, has the absolute right to participate in that speech?
The domestic corporation after Citizens United has a First Amendment right to make independent expenditures, yes.
That's where we're trying to go here. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Step a little bit out of the legislative world into the business world. There are other regulatory bodies that may be affected by that. Federal Communications Commission, for example. They have their own set of rules, and they allow stations at this point to pretty much, they have to treat everyone equally, whatever that means. But they can't deny under this. Can they now? Does that remove their ability if you say now the labor union or business is not restricted in any form or fashion? Where is that going to go? How far is that going to filter down to not only our rules, but like the Federal Communications Commission? Are they still going to be able to imply those restrictions, which would, you know, really tip the scales if they can't restrict those and someone can put a lot of money into whatever it is? So where is that going to fall? How far is that going to filter down? Is it going to get to that level, or are we?
Whether an FCC law has any restriction on a corporation or labor union's ability to make political speech, that law wasn't challenged in Citizens United, but it's, if there is such a law, and I don't know FCC law.
And neither do I, but they sometimes will, and we run against it when they go and we want to buy ads, they only allow you to buy so many. There are restrictions on how much we can do. Are those restrictions being lifted under this? The FCC allows them to do it. It doesn't say they have to or not. So are we basically saying through this that if you have unlimited free speech, does that go to the full extreme and they can purchase as much as they want? Are we still allowed to restrict it? Could we under statute say somehow, how far do we need to go when we start looking at this? I mean, do we just stop at our rules, or do we need to go beyond that into commerce?
Disclaimer and disclosure laws are valid. The problem with saying a corporation can only speak to this extent, that runs afoul of some of the basic tenets of Buckley v. Valeo, and certainly a lot of those tenets were reiterated in Citizens United, that there can be, but probably not, a compelling government interest in equalizing the amount of speech or essentially telling a willing buyer of speech you can only purchase so much. That's a difficult area after this, because the right to a corporation or a labor union, these speech rights, they exist. And to go and tell the corporation, well, you can only speak this much, a law like that is subject to strict scrutiny. And the court took a very dim view of trying to, in part, equalize speech in Citizens United, referring back to Buckley v. Valeo.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything else? Any other questions here?
We have our legal counsel.
Yes. Could I? Thank you very much. I don't know if you cleared this up or not, because it's like trying to find a great goose in the fog, it looks like to me, on this thing. Reverend Grunberg, and then I'm going to ask Mr. Bullard to come forward, if he would, and maybe shed some light on this.
This question, I guess, could be for anybody here or online, Mr. Chair. Are you aware, now that we've had one case, and that case, the Citizens United, took the law in a totally different direction than it had been going for a long time? Are there any other cases in the pipeline, either before the U.S. Supreme Court, before any courts of appeals, before any other court of record, I mean, not trial court, but any appellate court, that you're aware of, that are raising any of the subsidiary issues that we've been talking about, or that we haven't?
Not to my knowledge. I've seen cases on the state level that refer to state statutes that distinguish between state just state and foreign corporations. So in their definitions, they talk, yeah. But
I wasn't limiting it to that, right. But just any second generation or interpretive cases that we should be watching for in the next few months.
Not in this, not to my knowledge in this area, but I'll certainly continue.
I mean, I'm talking about anything related to Citizens United, and we don't need an answer on that now, but I think it's going to be important as we legislate in this area to be kept abreast. Hey, there's a case that's coming out. It's under advisement in the New Hampshire Supreme Court or something. Pardon me?
Not when we legislate, but if we legislate in this area.
Well, yes. Yeah, as we're looking at this.
Okay. Reverend Johnson, and I want to get to Mr. Bullard.
And this is directed toward the administration. I think we've identified that there are some, I don't know if problems are the right word, but some questions in statute. Have you been instructed to take the lead, or is anyone taking the lead on this, to have the administration, Department of Law, review it and bring back proposed statutes to fix some of these? Is anyone being charged with that, or are we just, is this the first brush at trying to get our hands on this? I mean, is anyone else looking at it, or can we expect some legislation, or are we just going to have to create it?
I've been advised to essentially create the analysis, show the policymakers where the issues are. I can't speak to the next step, but
who could speak to the next step? Because I want to cut to the chase here.
That's my question.
Whom do we talk to get some straight answers?
We have Craig Tillery here. Craig's the
director. Well, no, let him answer. I didn't ask you. I asked him.
Again, I mean, I represent APOC. I advise the Attorney General's office, and whether the Attorney General, the coordination between him and policymakers, I'm not always privy to that, but what I'm saying is what I'm doing is creating the analysis.
If you're going to pick up the phone and say, who do I sick these fellows on, who would you call?
Again,
the gov.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook here.
Thank you.
Would you please hang around?
Certainly.
Mr. Bullard, welcome to the committee, and I got to say you've worked on several pieces of legislation for me on a variety of subjects, and I think other folks here. You do some good work, especially the ones that actually get passed.
Thank you, Chairman Lin. Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Lin and members of the committee. I'd like to acknowledge the able performance of Mr. Patasin here. This is a really dynamic and difficult area of law, and it's clear as mud. You asked if we could simplify this area in our statutes. It would be really difficult to simplify this area because of the law in this area. In some ways, this case makes it even more complicated. In this case, not speaking to contributions and only to independent expenditures, we have yet another sort of special area of campaign finance law where we have to come up with new disclosure and disclaimer requirements. It would be really nice to simplify Title 15. I don't know if this case presents that opportunity. A number of you have made points or had questions, and I'd like to sort of take them in turn if that's acceptable. First, there was some discussion of Title 15, Chapter 13084, and using a fictitious name or the name of another. I think perhaps more relevant to your inquiry, if we have a new nonprofit called Alaskan Friends of Alaska for Alaska, in terms of getting to who that might be. Under 15.13040P, I believe it is, we require that some contributions, that their true source be disclosed. This is a little more on point than using a fictitious name or name of another. If I incorporate myself as Alaska Friends of Alaskans for Alaska, that will be my real name. It's possible with disclosure and disclaimer requirements to require an entity or a corporation perhaps to disclose its top contributors so we can break through this veil of a name. You might consider some legislation in that area in terms of true sources of contributions. Another point that you made was this question of manipulation of media airtime. The analysis in Citizens United talks about a sort of free marketplace of ideas, and it sort of contemplates that there's unlimited amounts of media out there. This is the first Supreme Court case where they use the word blogs in the opinion. So it seems difficult if money is speech, and we've said that we can't suppress speech based on the speaker's corporate form, to regulate in that area about how much airtime someone could receive. I don't know what efforts in that area would look like, but they would be difficult given the holding of this case. Other areas that we haven't discussed but are probably of interest to you. The disclosure timetables for persons right now, they are not the same as the disclosure sort of schedules that are required for candidate contributions. Since most corporations, unless they were non-group entities, weren't exposed to our disclosure rules before, they're much different. You might think about bringing those in line if that is amenable to your policy objectives, but there's nothing that prevents us from doing that.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah.
Very good, thank you.
On that point, would there be anything that would prevent us from requiring online real-time expenditure reporting for this category of persons?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. So far, all our disclosure rules and regulations, laws, have been upheld. It's possible to imagine a point where we would require so much that it could be considered a bar to speech. We've examined electronic disclosure and those requirements for candidates in the past, and I I think quite recently in this body. I don't know if the arguments that were made in that arena about the difficulty and the sort of onerous quality of having to do these things in real time would apply to larger entities, to corporations, and to nonprofits. So it's certainly conceivable that you could require a real-time electronic reporting to APOC.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I understand that right now we don't require contributions from certain groups to be reported individually. They can just, I mean, I think there's been some APOC rulings that you don't have to, you just the amount, who you are, the principals, the treasurer, but the contributions can be anonymous in certain, in some areas. And I think, and we can't do that as candidates. So what I think I heard you say is to bring those in alignment would be a policy call that would do that. And if we do that, and if I might, two-part question, as we have talked about full disclosure about making every contribution available to the public, we've run across some resistance from some organized groups that say we don't want to let our membership be known, be public, and kind of express a right to privacy. So at what point does our constitutional right to privacy overlap with our desire to know who's influencing our public policy, if at all?
Good question.
Representative Johnson, through the chair. It's difficult. There are existing laws in other states elsewhere that major contributors, if we're going to require, say, disclaimer in an ad, that Alaska Friends of Alaskans for Alaska might have to reveal their five largest contributors. Something like that seems completely, let's say, safe. At a certain point, the anonymous contributor of $5 who's bought a raffle ticket or something like that, that's the opposite end of the spectrum. Somewhere between those two.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
so $7.50.
And you're going to draft that, right? Okay. Any other questions from Mr. Bullock? Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I don't know if he was done when we were on that point. I wanted to.
Well, please continue. Anything else you have to share with us?
I would be much happier fielding questions.
I can call on Representative Grunberg here to ask you a question.
Two lines of question. Just, I don't know, Mr. Chair, we have Craig Tillery here, who's the Assistant Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division, whether he would be able to answer your earlier question. But
I may invite him up here.
Yeah, I would like to ask somebody, and it may be Mr. Tillery. I'm wondering what others, do either of you or anybody online know any other efforts that either A, attorneys general in any of the other states are doing to flesh out the contours of this new decision, or B, what any other state legislatures are doing to legislate in this area in the wake of Citizens United? Is there anybody on the line or anybody here at the table or in the audience who can answer those questions, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Anybody? Mr. Bullard?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. In general terms, I'm aware of some efforts on the federal level in Congress that relate to it. Some of the similar to what we're discussing here, strengthened disclosure requirements, also trade association transparency, which gets to Representative Johnson's, tax provisions, where Congress is revisiting the tax status of certain nonprofits and corporations who engage in political activity, and dealing with foreign sources of funding. Right now, that's really difficult because we could have an American corporation or an American subsidiary that has majority foreign ownership, perhaps, that the shareholders themselves are foreign nationals, and it's not clear that those would be covered by 2 U.S.C. 441E, which we discussed earlier, and also broadening the definition of coordination Representative Grunberg had gotten to this point earlier when you were talking about the sort of expenditures. More on that point, we do have a definition at 15.13.400E, which is independent expenditures, which is a little bit more on point for your early inquiry. But perhaps we can examine what coordination in this context would be.
Not as a mandate, but I mean, could you give some kind of written communication, basically of what you just said, that we might look at and come back with you and say, you know, could we do this? Could we do that? Something for us. I'd like to get something from somebody out of this hearing this morning that we can look at and see. Representative Grunberg.
Yes, thank you. That would probably answer a lot of my questions. Focusing on the two areas, that last one you talked about, Mr. Bullard, the coordination and independent expenditures, two sides of the same coin, I would really like to get the benefit of your thinking and law or anybody else on this. And number two, looking at the tax issues, I think it sounds, because I had thought a little bit about this, am I right? The question is whether these, quote, independent expenditures for free speech, unquote, are or should be deductible as business expenditures. Is that the issue?
Through the chair. I'm not familiar enough with these efforts, but I'd have to say that one caution is, I mean, if it's going to suppress speech, we've just moved the First Amendment issue elsewhere and turned it into sort of a prior restraint. So there are limits on what can be done in that area, and I am absolutely unfamiliar with what they
Mr.
are.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. One more, then I'm
yeah. That's the one constitutional issue, but is that not trumped by the sovereign's power to tax and to determine what the deductibility of certain expenditures are?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't have an answer right now for that question.
Very good. Representative Peterson, and then I'd like to ask Mr. Tillery, invite you not, you know, to come forward and have some fun. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking further down the road, say the Alaska legislature does adopt some new laws for disclosure, for example, and a corporation or a labor union decides they think that that's too burdensome and that it's infringing upon their right to free speech, could they file a case, get an injunction, and stop the law from taking effect anyway?
Representative Peterson, through the chair, it would depend on the specifics of the case and the ruling of the court. They could certainly seek injunctive and declaratory relief. Whether it would be granted to them is a matter of pure
speculation. We had to bet what the court would do. Representative Seaton, and then Mr. Tillery.
Okay, thank you. And I wanted to go back to the tax deductibility issue just for a moment. If we allow these political speech to be tax deductible to corporations, aren't we essentially saying that the state is going to be financing that that speech where we don't finance that for individuals? So I guess my question is, couldn't we be looking at this in the other aspect of requiring the corporation or the labor union that wishes to exercise that political speech to pay for it themselves instead of having the deductibility of that on taxes, so that the general citizens of Alaska end up paying a portion of that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, you make a good legal argument. I don't know.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I think it would be good, and we'll ask, I would like to ask for a legal opinion, a follow-up on that for us, so that, because that might be one thing that we would want to look at. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Mr. Tiller, you are invited.
Could I ask you a question before he comes
yes.
up?
Yes.
In the end, with everything that's been said and discussed and dissected and put together, should we just throw it all out and have state sponsorship of campaigns?
Wouldn't stop that.
Representative Becker, through the chair, that's a political question.
That's why I asked it. Yeah, I know.
May I follow up with one question?
Yeah, but it wouldn't stop this.
Let's get Mr. Tiller up here.
Just follows up on Paul's question for one.
That's it. Go ahead.
Okay.
That's it.
And this is really for Mr. Bullard. Right now, I think in the Resources Committee, there are several bills dealing with the tax policy on the oil and gas industry. My question to you, would an amendment dealing with this subject of taxability and deductibility for these kinds of expenditures fall within the subject matter of those bills?
Kind of venturing afar here, it seems like.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just if I might, in allowable deductions that provided under ACES prohibits marketing and that kind of stuff from being deducted anyway. I would assume that if you're advocating for something on TV, that would be marketing for something and would not be allowed, and our department would kick that out as a deduction anyway. So I think it's already there.
Well, and I don't want to go down.
Yeah, that we could. We don't want to have a resource meeting here. I guarantee you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
just
you.
Something to think about, yeah.
We may call you back here, Mr. Tillery. Now's your chance. Now's your chance to speak. Now's your chance to speak for the administration. I'm being facetious.
That's fortunate, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Craig Tiller. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division for the Department of Law. And my role, I am not an expert in this area. I don't practice in this area. I haven't practiced this area in the past. I know this is an area of great concern to the legislature, and frankly, I am here to get a sense of what you need and what we're going to be able to do for you. So if you've got a technical question, it's not me.
Well, let me... what I think we need, and others may, you know, it's pretty basic. First of all, from APOC, I'd like to see some general non-legal guidelines, kind of interim guidelines, until we make some hard decisions on this thing. Some kind of maybe non-legal guideline. What do we do in the interim here between now and the time some specific things come out? Secondly, the basic question is new legislation required for everybody to keep on the correct side of the law between now and the time everybody starts campaigning? And some are campaigning now because they're not in session. And, you know, corporations are doing business. Is new legislation required from somebody, either from your side or our side or perhaps both?
Yes. Mr. Chairman.
Whatever that legislation is.
My understanding of this is, I mean, new legislation is not required in the sense that this could be worked out through litigation. That, however, is not an efficient way to proceed. There are clearly some aspects of our laws that are directly impacted by the decision. It would provide guidance and clarification to the public and so forth if those were dealt with, and it would be more efficient not to deal with it through litigation. There are other areas that Mr. Patasson has mentioned that there is an indirect impact on our laws. That is, this decision has done something which would appear to allow something that was not contemplated, and so that laws that would talk about disclaimer and so forth aren't applicable simply because the idea of an independent expenditure wasn't even allowed for a corporation. So and that's kind of a separate question. Again, nothing is required, whether policymakers, yourself, the governor, whoever, wish to make changes. Certainly that's, you know, the more clarification the citizens get, generally, it's a good thing. And again, I'd emphasize litigation is not the most efficient way to do that.
Well, would not some kind of legislation perhaps help avoid litigation? Because right now, I don't think anybody really knows what's going on.
Mr. Chairman, I think that it is correct that some form of clarification, whether it's through legislation, through regulations, through guidance, or whatever, will likely help to avoid litigation. Based on what I have heard already, I believe that some members of the public have suggested that they would be litigating this case, litigating the effect of this case on our laws. Okay. I would just point out, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then, what recommendations would you, from the Department of Law and from the administrative side, what recommendations do you have to this committee and to the Alaska legislature as a whole? You know, what do we do now to help clarify the situation?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I can tell you, we don't have any recommendations for you now. What we do have, or what we are doing, is we are in the process of finalizing an analysis that will identify the direct and the indirect impacts of this law, of the court's decision. That will allow yourself and other policymakers to then decide what, if anything, you want to do about it. Once we receive that direction, then our role will be to assist you and other policymakers in how to carry out what it is that you wish to do. And that's kind of our role. We don't make the decisions about what you should and shouldn't do.
Well, I didn't mean to make the decision, but I mean, so with all deliberate speed, and I'm sure that's what you're doing, what general timeline are we looking at here? Because the session ends in the middle of April.
Mr. Chairman, we are very cognizant of that timeline, and we are working this pretty hard. And I hate to give you a timeline because then I'm going to fail at it. But we are certainly hoping to have some final analysis completed within, say, the next week.
About a week or so, maybe.
That is what we are hoping to do. The more you get into this thing, you have a complex decision that we are trying to apply to complex laws, and I don't know.
Right.
We're making that's our goal.
Great. Well, you hope springs eternal. I'm hoping to lose weight, but so far it hadn't happened. Representative Peterson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. We do have a deadline for filing legislation coming up, I believe.
Well, that's if I may, that's personal legislation. I believe, if somebody correct me if I'm wrong, if we do in fact have some kind of legislation coming from our side, it would probably be, undoubtedly be, a committee bill anyway. It wouldn't be.
That'd be exempt from that?
I don't think any of us have our name on it. It'd be a committee.
Okay,
it'd
thank
be a
you.
Committee bill. It would be more appropriate, I think. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was the timeline question. And when we get into a little committee discussion, when we're finished here, I think we've bitten this off.
You, I begin, please.
I think we've bitten this project off by having this meeting. I think you're going to be leading the charge on this, and it's our responsibility.
There's another body down the hall here.
Well, and we don't address the other body, and we can only do what we do. And by having this meeting and posing these questions, I think you have probably bitten this off, Mr. Chairman, and I applaud you for that. Thank you.
Like a volunteer for Vietnam, I
you may wish you were back.
Well, there I had a helmet, but this needs to be a coordinated thing. You know, I don't think you come directly from us. Or from you, you know, we're all in this sinking ship together here, and the Supreme Court has kind of torpedoed it. And again, it doesn't matter whether you think it's quote a good thing or a bad thing. It's a thing that happened, and we have to deal with it in some way. You know, because everybody wants to follow the law and do what's right. That's candidates, that's unions, that's corporations, that, you know, I look very positive on it. We just have to know, you know, what the rules of the game are.
Mr. Chairman, and it is not our intent or what we are doing to be either coy or high involved
well,
from this committee. It is just something where we feel we have to be very careful.
Yeah.
And that takes a little time sometimes.
Any other questions? Representative, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh. Well, I think I had a question for you.
You know, as I've followed our conversation here, we've had basically three items that I'm looking at as far as actions that we could take. One would be to shorten or put in a time period, first of all, and then have a short time frame for disclosure of expenditures. The other one was the true source of, and this is two different things. One was funds and one was for expenditures, and I think we've got true source of funds now for candidates. So I think that we're talking about true sources of independent or true, not sources, but true the expenditures. And I would like some opinion as whether we could also, for a group that is making an expenditure, where they got the funds from. We know there are restrictions for foreign corporations. I don't know if there's if those groups, whether we can have disclosure of their major contributors or just the true source of their, I mean, not the source, but the true expenditures, reporting of the expenditures, and then I guess it is the true source of the funds, the major candidate, major contributors to that group. Probably wouldn't apply to corporations as well, but it would apply to the source of funds that were used for those expenditures. Maybe that's the way to get at that. And then the tax deductibility of the independent expenditures. I heard those three areas in which we might do something. So if we could get your or the AG's kind of wrap up on where they think the sidebars on those issues would be, I would appreciate it. And then there was one other area that I wanted to ask you about, and that was in corporate law, we have, you know, our definitions of who a corporation is and what they can do. Are there any things within that definition or the definition of what they're able to do that could address any of the potential problems that we see in on the horizon in this area of independent expenditures?
Okay. Thank you. Representative Seaton,
I would appreciate my preference is that the governor and the attorney general take the lead on this. Please take the, you know, we'll do what needs to be done, but I want Mr. Bullard over here to have enough time to work on other pieces of legislation for it other than this. But I would prefer that the governor and the attorney general take the lead on this, and then I'm sure the legislature would proceed to that in a very rapid fashion, I would hope. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other question. I noticed that Citizens United was, the case was on a restriction on expenditures in time periods before elections. Did that, if there were not time periods before the elections, if it covered the entire time period, was there any distinction in that opinion based on the restrictive time period, or does that Citizens United cover at any time in a political process or any process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would need to defer to Mr. Patasson. He's read the case a lot more times than I have.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Tiller. Yeah, very good. Yes, sir. Identify yourself, please, with the clerk.
This is John Patasson. Through the chair, they've afforded the First Amendment speech right to corporations to make independent expenditures and labor unions as well. The specific federal law, you're right, there were these little window periods, and those were the only times. And even inside those window periods, the corporations and labor unions could form a pack and speak inside those little windows of time. But that still wasn't good enough. There still wasn't a compelling government interest to curtail First Amendment speech leading up to these primary and general elections. Nothing from the analysis, in my view, if you take it back and say, well, what if we change that window of opportunity? Again, there's nothing in my view that says that would lead me to think that there's some way to outright ban that independent expenditure if it's political speech. So, yeah.
So just to follow up, and thank you for that. And I'm just trying to clarify for all of us, because we know, you know, we're talking about those windows that were those restrictions. So your view is that there is no window that Citizens United formed a entire package of this speech. Independent expenditures couldn't be restricted at any time period. Is that correct?
Yeah, given that it was the rationale for this anti-distortion compelling government interest, that all of this messaging 30 days or 60 days before elections is diluting the message of others and creating this kind of problem in the political marketplace of ideas. The fact that the window was so close, if you tried to back up the window, it's the same problem. The same problem is that you're taking speech out of the political marketplace. And after Citizens United, I think the court would take a dim view of that at any kind of attempt to take that away.
So. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Representative Gatto, then we're going to start doing a wrap up here.
In my own opinion, I have an outrageous question. Would we still be within the bounds of the Supreme Court decision and the state of Alaska's laws if we, A, allowed unions and corporations to make contributions, but, B, required that when they did that, they would have to contribute equal time, equal money to the person that they opposed? Where would we stand on that position?
Just to be clear, your question was about contributions, or is your question about independent expenditure? Because they're two separate, distinct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're to try to equalize.
I'm trying to neutralize the effect of the Supreme Court decision by saying, A, you have a right, but B, you have an obligation.
It just makes freedom twice as expensive, Carl.
I think that gets into some of the issues that Alpheus Bullard presented about prior restraint. Now that the speech is protected, you have to be careful. But I couldn't comment right off whether that exact scenario would be constitutional or unconstitutional. We'd really have to give it some real thought. So.
But at least it's a consideration that it might be constitutional. I mean, I thought you were just going to say, well, Section 13, Part 4 outlaws that.
Through the chair, yeah. Whenever I'm asked, is something constitutional or not, that gives me the green light to say, well, that really depends, because I never want to give that opinion, because whatever opinion I give won't be anywhere near exact enough. So,
thank you very much, John. I don't anticipate another hearing on this, although we all deserve the right to do that for the committee. And please proceed as rapidly as you can. Keep us advised, and probably one more time, I would prefer that the governor take the lead on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We all do.
Let's go around the table. Well, first of all, is anybody online who would want to add their comments to this? Anybody else in the audience who'd like to comment on this? Okay. Fine. I'm going to close that. Any wrap-up statements just going around the room here, then we're going to start bringing this to a close. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This Supreme Court decision obviously has got a lot of implications that, in scenarios that we could think of, that could have lasting and large effects on our elections. And one of them that comes to my mind is it might dampen the interest from the average citizen, who would feel that now the corporations and other large wealthy entities have got the ability of more or less unlimited, you know, speech through making paying for advertisements on TV, radio, whatever medium, that the individual's vote and voice is now so small that it's insignificant, and they may feel that it's not worthwhile to go bother to vote anymore or register to vote. And there's already a segment in the society that feels that way, and this might increase that, the number of people, and even more. And also the recruitment of candidates. If a person feels that unless you've got connections with a large wealthy corporation or a labor union or something, that you have no chance to raise enough money to put up a winning campaign, you're not going to throw your hat in the ring, and therefore you get fewer and fewer people running for office. And I don't see that as a good thing. And so there are lots of lasting implications, and I think it would be great if we could figure out a way to keep some of our current Alaska disclaimer laws and disclosure laws effective, so that could maybe keep the playing field reasonably level, because I think we have done a pretty good job in that way over the years, and I'd like to see some of those laws still be in effect.
So you don't think an inspired contribution campaign on your part, fundraising campaign on your part, could match a General Motors or Exxon or somebody?
No, I don't.
General Motors.
Representative Grunberg.
I didn't know some of these auto manufacturers aren't doing too well.
You might do better than them.
Yeah, I'm interested in the tax deductibility, and I'm going to explore whether all of these potential expenditures, fall under the prohibition against using the deductions for marketing. I think some of them may, but some of them may not, and I'm going to be in contact with legal counsel on that.
Thank you very much. Reverend Johnson, any comment, closing comment?
Oh, yes. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your desire to have the third floor do the work on this, but we are the policy body.
Well, we still have, they put forth a bill, and like any other governor's bill, we still do what we will with it.
Yes, sir, I appreciate that, but I think there's been interest here, and I think that that we should be the place where it at least is facilitated. And what I would like to suggest and give you my permission as a committee member, and I'm one vote, is for you to draft a letter to the governor asking for him to, I know they're doing it right now, but I didn't see any specific charge of anyone who was here. They're working on stuff. Maybe a week they'll get it. But asking for a specific request that something be done, that we not just leave here thinking that, you know, we've got three attorneys in the room that are going off doing other things, that something is going to happen. If this is a significant issue, and I believe it is, that then we should at least take the charge of implementing or starting the dialogue with the third floor. And for my money as a committee member, I would certainly not have any problem authorizing the committee chair drafting a letter, requesting assistance, setting out some, you know, negotiations, or I don't want to say negotiations because it's not, but asking for the third floor to take the lead, or their willingness to take the lead, because they may not, and then we're sitting here at the end of the session with nothing. And if they say, no, we're not going to do it, then it will be incumbent on us. If they say they will, then that's an issue. But I'd like to get that clarified. And I appreciate the hard work of the gentleman here, but I'd certainly have to put any of them on the spot of going up, and I think it's incumbent on us that we talk to the third floor and not send messengers.
I think that's a very good suggestion, and with the concurrence of the board, of the corporation, with the concurrence of the committee, I will do that. Any opposition on the committee for my doing that? Then I'll run a draft of that by the other committee members. Would that be satisfactory? Reverend Grunberg.
Yeah, I don't want to take a position on that one way or the other till I see the draft, because...
I meant for me to share a draft with you, and you...
Yeah, that'd be great.
And you make comments on it.
Sure.
I'm sure you will. Reverend Gatto. Good idea.
Thank you.
President Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the Supreme Court made the right decision. And even though I think there will be some unintended consequences and side effects and difficulties for people such as the people here that are just trying to keep their job and other members in the building, it still is the right decision because what it involved is freedom. And as soon as we start messing with the Constitution and making decisions, not based on what's written, but based on searching through the Constitution to find something that supports your point of view, when you start with a point of view and then you search for something that may support it. So I'm a supporter of the decision. I think the idea of freedom is far more important than who gets elected and who gets the campaign, because if we give up that part, then who gets elected and because of unintended influences and spectacular amounts of money makes us start looking a little bit like some of the republics that we don't want to resemble. So with that and with that said, you know, I still believe that, and I want to do what we can to make it so that they don't have spectacular influence on elections, but they still have those rights, and we'll see how that pans out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just in addition, Mr. Chairman, I want to be very clear that
on that point.
Yeah, that I'm not advocating that we go and oppose anything that's going on. What I'm suggesting the letter to the governor say is, who's going to take the lead on adjusting our statutes to match the most recent ruling? Because I too agree with Representative Gatto. So that would be just in clarification.
Nothing in the letter will say I oppose this or I support the decision.
Thank you.
Again, it's irrelevant. The decision has been made.
Right, and that I just wanted to be on the record. I'm not asking for a letter saying let's go fight this or anything. I just want to.
No.
How do we conform our statutes to, and who's going to take the lead on conforming our statutes to match this?
As I said at the outset, the purpose of this hearing, find out what the guidelines are. So everybody does what they're supposed to do. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I pretty much outlined some of my concerns. I forgot one, though, and that was on corporations having more rights and protections than individuals expressing speech in these expenditures. And my understanding, and maybe we'll need the lawyers to let us know a little more, but the purpose of a corporation is to give, whether it's an LLC or a C corporation, is to give liability protection for the stockholders and others. And so I guess what I would like to do is see if we need to change the liability protection for libel and slander for corporations in the execution of independent expenditures so that it mirrors what it is for an individual. If I take an independent expenditure and I lie about Representative Johnson, I'm liable. If a corporation or an LLC would do that, it's only limited to the assets in the corporation, and if the donations were the amount that was expended, basically, I could form an LLC and do such a thing and have a shield on liability that would have to be pierced in a whole different way. And so not that those things couldn't be possibly pierced if you went through a long legal thing and showed it as a sham corporation, but I'm concerned that we at least have the same protection or ability for the public discourse with a corporation as you have for a individual in these independent expenditures. So I would like to also put that down in Mr. Tillery and Mr. Bullock's notepad as something that we could address directly to make the corporations and labor unions have the same liability that an individual would if they're doing a political free speech independent expenditure, not more onerous on a corporation, but at least have the same liability that an individual would have. So appreciate that.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to draw this close. We're right at 10 o'clock. I would like to thank all the participants today and the committee. Obviously, this is a very, very important court decision, and it's important how we deal with it here in Alaska, because the bottom line is, what's good for Alaska? That's what's important here. And so our next meeting is going to be Tuesday. I don't have the agenda put together, but it's coming Tuesday yet. We had to figure that out before, I think it's 4 o'clock this afternoon. If anybody on the committee has any hearing requests, they need to get it in before 4 o'clock for us to consider, not to do necessarily, but to consider putting it on the agenda. So no other business to come for the committee. We will not meet Saturday. We will meet Tuesday. And good day, and be safe out there. We are adjourned.